team members from University of Maryland Shore Regional Health in the studio with us for the latest installment of the Ask the Expert series. Joining us in the studio are Trina Williamson, Regional Director of Communications and Marketing, and today's expert, Dale Jafari, Certified Registered Nurse Practitioner with University of Maryland Shore Women's Care. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Trina, talk to us about what's going on at University of Maryland Shore Regional Health.
Great, yeah. As part of University of Maryland Medical System, Shore Regional Health is the principal provider of comprehensive health care services for the residents of Caroline, Dorchester, Kent, Queen Anne's, and Talbot counties. Shore Regional Health's team of more than 2,500 employees, medical staff, board members, and volunteers work with various community partners to fulfill our mission of creating healthier communities together. By offering our patients regional access to care provided by a group of highly skilled medical experts. I'm really excited to have Dale Jafari with me today, who is here to share some vital information about women's health and the importance of preventative care.
Good morning again, Dale. Tell us a little bit about what services you provide patients at Shore Women's Care.
Shore Women's Care is devoted to improving the health of the lives of women age 12 and above in our local communities. We provide services like an annual well woman exam, breast exams and cervical cancer screenings, evaluation and treatment for things that women commonly deal with like urinary tract infections and pelvic pain, menopausal symptom management, contraception for our younger people, lots of preventative health screening. Mm-hmm. We are firm believers that if you prevent the disease in the first place, it's far more cost effective and far better for the health of the community to identify those things that could become an issue and circumvent them before they become an issue.
Elaborate for us a little bit on that and why it's so important to obtain preventative screenings.
Well, one thing that we know regarding risk for breast and cervical cancer is that the earlier you diagnose the problem or the earlier you diagnose a precursor to the problem, the more likely you are to have a near 100% likelihood of 5-year disease-free survival. So what we mean by that is that if we're referring specifically to cervical cancer risk, we look at how often should you have a pap test performed. Well, that answer got a little cloudy about 4 years ago when they changed the pap screening guidelines. Having been in women's health 30-some years, it was beaten into me that all women get a pap every year as long as the sun comes mm-hmm. up. That's no longer the case, and it's a little threatening to all of us to change what has been a hard and fast rule for so many years and suddenly decide that it's not quite so hard and fast.
Yeah.
A number of reasons go into why those screening guidelines were changed, but the bottom line remains that it is a conversation between you and your healthcare provider to assess for the risks associated with cervical cancer and then to take the appropriate screening measures. Risk factors include things like first sexual intercourse prior to age 21, more than 5 lifetime sexual partners, cigarette smoking, a prior history of a pap abnormality, DES exposure in utero, things like that. Those are people who are automatically considered at higher risk. There are other factors that play into that risk because we know that about 99.7% of cervical cancers have identified within that tumor the presence of high-risk human papillomavirus types 16, 18, 45, or one of the other numerous high-risk HPVs. Mm-hmm. We know that that's transmitted through sexual contact. So the focus on risk for cervical cancer is largely focused on sexual activity.
Mm-hmm.
The current screening guidelines are annual pap for those at high risk, PAP every 3 years with co-testing, meaning that you test for the presence of high-risk virus as well as the presence of abnormal cells in all women aged 30 and above. Any woman who then has an abnormality identified would go on to either further screening and perhaps a change in that every 3-year pattern back to every 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to the preventative screenings that we talked about, is there anything else women could do to prevent cervical cancer?
Well, now you've gotten to the heart of the situation, because
yeah.
not only can women do something about it, but so can men, meaning that the male is often the vector for passing the virus from one partner to another partner. If we were to vaccinate all males and females between the ages of 9 and 26 with the HPV or human papillomavirus vaccine, we could potentially see cervical cancer eliminated in my lifetime. Mm. That is an awesome goal, and it is an attainable goal if we can improve vaccine rates for those in that age group.
Yeah. In October, we heard a lot about breast cancer prevention and early detection as we observed, of course, National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. What's your recommendation to patients that are concerned about their breast health?
Once again, we're back to that conversation with your healthcare provider. Quite frankly, I have some concerns about the latest guidelines that were released just last week by the American Cancer Society. We have felt strongly for many years, and the 2003 guidelines by ACS also suggested that all women aged 40 and above should have a mammogram every year. What I heard when they described the new guidelines was for a low-risk population, and therein lies the catch. Who is going to define low risk for me? Mm-hmm. I know that I live on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and I know that the breast cancer rates on the Eastern Shore of Maryland and Delaware are amongst the highest in the country. Am I a high-risk patient or am I a low-risk patient? As a healthcare professional, in my opinion, as a woman, if you're 40 or older, in my area, you're a high-risk patient.
Yeah.
So the new guidelines suggest that you don't need the first mammogram until age 45, that you undergo annual screening 45 to 54, and then every 2 years above that. The other very controversial component of the new guideline was that it recommends against the use of clinical breast exams in terms of identifying an abnormality. That information is alarming to me again as a healthcare provider because I know how to do a clinical breast exam, and they are close to useless in the hands of an unskilled person or in the hands of a person who isn't doing an appropriate exam. However, for those of us who are experienced and skilled, you can identify the difference between a benign feeling nodule or mass and a malignant feeling mass by a lot of the physical characteristics. So the risk is that you identify more benign conditions resulting in what's called a false positive. The advantage is that you're identifying at the earliest possible time a true abnormality.
We hear a lot about the advancements in technologies and mammography equipment. What can you tell us about the technologies offered at Shore Regional Health?
Well, I can honestly say that Shore Regional is cutting edge. And if you look at all of the available screening modalities across the spectrum, we started way back with simple X-ray mammography. That fell by the wayside 7 or 8 years ago with the advent of digital mammography, where we now get far more detail because the images are computer-generated images where we can actually zero in or magnify the area of interest when we see something a little different. So those mammograms are read by a human. They're also read by a computer using computer-aided detection. The access to MRI has been around for some time, and it is a mixed concern because it identifies far more changes or differences in the breast. Unfortunately, it also identifies far more benign conditions that then require further evaluation. Most recently, we have the access to something called tomosynthesis. The name itself is a little scary to some, so let's stick with 3D. So how is tomosynthesis better than a standard digital mammogram? Well, you have to look at the difference between being flat, like a circle, or round, like a ball. So if you are out in the front yard and you're raking leaves and suddenly you notice your ring is missing, you can stop where you are and look both directions. You can look up and down, and you're going to see a limited field, and you may or may not see that missing ring. However, if you retrace your steps, and every 10 or 15 steps, you stop and look right to left, up and down, suddenly the sunlight is shining off an object that wasn't there before, and you found your ring. So with the tomosynthesis combined with digital mammography in women who had more dense breasts, there was an increase in identification of potentially malignant lesions that was really significant at about 41% and a lower incidence of false positive by 15%. So here on the shore, we have access to tomosynthesis at the Digital and Diagnostic and Imaging Center, as well as at our Chestertown location.
Good information. Thank you, Dale. We're going to go back to Trina for a second. Where can people learn more about women's health services that are available at Shore Regional Health?
Yeah, great. Additional information about the services provided by Dale at Shore Women's Healthcare can be found by visiting our website. That's umshoreregional.org. In addition, I would like to let our listeners know that over the next several months, Shore Regional Health is looking forward to expanding upon our women's health practice with some very exciting new programs and healthcare services. So more information on that will be coming very soon. We're very excited about that, so stay tuned.
Sounds good. Thank you very much. Trina Williamson, Dale Jafari with the University of Maryland Shore Regional Health. Thank you for all the information this
morning. Absolutely. Thanks for having us.